Chapter 74. Tarred. High up on an apartment building across the street from the mansion, a very still, very quiet person watched the man in black circle the block again. The man was checking out the monster's house. Tarred just knew it. How exciting. Tarred watched the monster's house every night. Aside from regular bursts of sheer terror when the monster left, or sadness when the monster came back with one of Tard's badly wounded brothers or sisters, nothing interesting ever happened. But this was interesting. Who was this person? What did he want with the monster's house? Tard watched the man in black turn left on Jackson and vanish from sight. Would he be back again? Tard hoped so. Chapter 75. The Delivery Boy. Pookie showered, hoping the hot water and rough scrubbing might somehow take the edge off his lack of sleep. A nice 30-minute shower, the perfect way to finally get a little alone time. Delivery Kung Pao Shrimp was on the way. Some food, a 20-minute power nap, and he'd be right as rain. Sure, as if he could ever be right again. Mutants, vigilantes, and murderers. Oh, my. Ed and Brian playing fast and loose with sanity, and Pookie considered his dance card quite full, thank you very much. Brian did seem better, though. Following the clues from Biznas to the Jessups to Erickson's house had given the guy direction and purpose. No longer were they just reacting to a batch of random dreams. Now they had a target. Even though this wasn't an official investigation, they would still use the process and tactics they'd use in any other case. What would they do when they found evidence they could actually use? Were judges in on this? Was the DA? Maybe. But maybe the assistant DA wasn't in on the loop, just like Robin hadn't been in on it. Pookie would have no choice but to arrange a meeting to make sure of that. Well, well, well. Miss Jennifer Wills from the land of sexy shoes and short skirts, maybe you and I will be spending some time together after all. With our clothes on, sadly, but the journey of 1,000 Changbangs begins with a single coffee. Pookie stepped out of the shower and toweled off. He would make some calls and put Robin and Mr. Burns to work, mow down on the Kung Pao, then promptly take a nap. Nap, shower, and food, the magical trifecta that could right all wrongs. He tucked the towel around his waist, then found his cell phone and dialed Robin. She answered immediately.
Pooks, you guys okay?
We're fine, he said. You know, just doing the police work thing. How about you?
Good news and bad,
she said.
The good news is I went to work this morning like normal, and no one said a peep. Metz wasn't there. I got an email from the mayor saying I was expected to carry on as before.
At least Robin wasn't fired. That was something. That's great. So were you able to get any more info from the bodies?
That's the bad news,
she said.
Seems there was a little clerical error at the morgue. The bodies of Blackbeard, Oscar Woody, and Jay Perlar were cremated this afternoon. All their personal effects are gone as well, including Blackbeard's phone.
Pookie's heart sank. Metz had deleted the computer records, and now all physical evidence was also gone for good.
Two positives, though,
Robin said.
Metz apparently didn't call the RapScan people to tell them I'm persona non grata. I snuck one of the portable DNA analyzers out of the morgue. If you find any other likely candidates, we can use the machine to test for the Z chromosome.
Ah, that Robin. Such a clever girl. How long will we have that gadget?
Don't know,
she said.
Metz and I were the only ones to use them so far. When he returns, I'll have to sneak it back in. We probably have it for as long as he's out.
Pookie's phone chirped with the theme music from The Simpsons. Black Mr. Burns calling. Robin, I gotta go. Great job, but there's nothing else you can do right now. Lie low and don't make waves.
Got it,
she said.
Take care of Brian for me.
Will do. He switched to the other line. Black Mr. Burns, tell me you have more info on Erickson.
Do I ever,
John said.
Jebediah Erickson has a criminal record that you're just going to love. And in case you couldn't tell by his real estate holdings, he's loaded. Old Jeb is actually Jeb Jr. Between Cash, Holdings, the Jessup's place, and the house on Franklin, Jeb Sr. left his boy around $20 million.
Rich kid with a criminal record. What did he do, steal monogram towels from the country club?
Slightly better,
John said.
14 allegations of assault and 3 of resisting arrest. But here's our trump card. He was charged and acquitted of one murder, convicted of another. Take a wild guess what the murder weapon was.
Pookie tried to calm the surge of excitement. A gold medal for archery was one thing. A murder conviction was another. I'll take what is an arrow for 200, Alex.
Nicely done,
John said.
And now for our bonus round, where the stakes really add up. The arrow thing wasn't in Erickson's SFPD records, no surprise there. Maybe Zhao has the city by the bay on lockdown, but her power doesn't appear to extend to certain correctional facilities. I found Erickson's case files at the California Medical Facility in Vacaville.
Pookie leaned back, shocked. The CMF? The same place they kept Charlie Manson and Juan Vallejo Corona?
Yep, as well as Ed, the co-ed butcher Kemper, and Keys, the deadly Dutch Maurice. Jeb Jr. was declared unfit to stand trial, so they incarcerated him in the last stop for serial killers. They put him away 28 years ago. After 18 months of incarceration, a certain Baldwin Metz uncovered new forensic evidence that wound up overturning the murder charge. Erickson walked out a free man.
That would have put him back on the street just over 26 years ago. Right about the time Amy Zhao and Rich Verdi put a whoopin' on Mr. Biznass. A knock on his door. Burns, my Kung Pao is here. Daddy needs coal for the choo-choo. Anything else?
That's all I've got,
he said.
I'll keep looking, though.
Pookie out! He folded the phone, grabbed his wallet, and opened the door. Standing there was a uniformed Amy Zhao. Oh, shit. Chief, Pookie said. I know budgets are tight, but moonlighting as a delivery boy. Inspector Chang, she said, then walked inside. Shut the door. We need to talk. She looked as neat and pressed as she did in her office at the hall. Pookie looked at the clock on his wall. 9:07 p.m. Did this woman ever put on a friggin' pair of jeans? He shut the door. He suddenly thought of Mr. Biznass's thrice broken nose. His eyes flicked to the polished gun holster hanging from Zhao's polished belt. His gun was in the bedroom, and he was wearing nothing but a towel. Awesome. Zhao brushed off Pookie's couch, then sat. Her eyes bore into him. I told you to leave it alone. Pookie thought of lying, but why bother? She wasn't here for a slap and tickle. Chief, we know about Marie's children. We know you deleted the symbols out of the database. We know you ripped up case files. We know you took all the Golden Gate slasher info out of the newspaper morgue. She crossed her legs. The law doesn't care about knowledge, Chang. It cares about proof. You have none. She was right, and it pissed him off to no end. How could she be so callous about it? So casual? We know about the Zed chromosome. She smiled. Do you even know what that means? Not really. Neither do I, she said. But it doesn't matter, because that information went the way of the computer records and the newspaper articles. Pookie shook his head. This woman disgusted him. How do you justify letting a vigilante run free? Above the law, murdering whoever he thinks did something wrong. How can you look your daughters in the eye when you kiss them goodnight? The mention of her daughters hit a chord. Her eyes narrowed in anger. She stood. How can I justify it? Because I saw the bodies! Her hands balled up into fists. A lifetime's worth of repressed rage seemed to explode. Have you ever seen a half-eaten 6-year-old? No? Well, I have, Chang. Dozens of them. Have you ever seen an entire family of 5 gutted, their intestines used to make art?
Have you ever seen a row of severed heads in different stages of decomposition? The fucking trophies of a psycho killer the cops couldn't find.
The outburst left him speechless. So much for the stone-eyed Chief Zhao. She vibrated with anger.
Well, Chang, have you?
He shook his head.
Until you have, don't judge me, you got that? And I don't have to justify anything to you. I am the goddamn San Francisco chief of the goddamn police. I'm sworn to protect this city, and that's exactly what I do. This saves lives, and you are trying your best to fuck that up.
She stopped suddenly, her lips curled back, her chest heaving. Pookie had never heard her raise her voice, let alone blow up like this. She made Brian look positively sane by comparison. Zhao opened her hands, let them fall to her sides. The cold expression returned.
Sometimes, Cheng, the right thing isn't written in the law books. We don't get to make that decision, he said. Cops enforce the laws. We don't pick and choose which ones count.
She shook her head and laughed.
Jesus, you sound just like I did.
Her hand smoothed her coat at her stomach, a motion to help her regain control rather than to adjust her uniform.
I'll give you one thing, she said. I'll give you this one thing, then you never speak of it again. You know about Erickson, don't you?
Pookie nodded.
Yeah, he was committed for murder.
Zhao paused, seemed to think her words through.
Then look something up for me. Oh, pardon me, have John Smith look it up for you. Tell him to analyze San Francisco's murder rate when Erickson was in the asylum. And by the way, you're fired.
What? She held out her hand.
Gun and badge.
Fuck you!
I warned you. You're done. So is Clouser. Now give me your gun and your badge.
Pookie remembered the look of rage on Brian's face when Zhao had confronted them over Blackbeard's body. Remembered it, because Pookie knew he now probably wore that very same expression. He walked to a tray he kept next to his TV. He picked up his badge in its leather billfold and tossed it to her. She caught it, put it in her pocket.
And the gun, she said. No, actually, just tell me where the gun is. Nightstand. Next to my bed.
She walked into the bedroom. He'd imagined getting the chief into his bedroom more times than he could count, but not this way. Fired? Brian was going to shit an egg roll. Zhao walked back into the living room, then stopped and stared at him.
Step away from the door, Cheng.
He realized he was blocking her path. He stepped aside, giving her plenty of room. She opened the door, made it halfway out before she turned.
You and Clausa are finished in San Francisco. Bay Area as well. Let's just go ahead and say all of Northern California. But with one phone call, I can get you both homicide jobs in any city in the country. Think about where you'd like to go. That's what you get from me if you stop all this bullshit and stay away from Erickson. And if we don't, then maybe you should look into employment as a prison guard, she said. Because that's the only way you're going to see Brian Clouser again.
She stepped out, then shut the door quietly behind her. Well, this had turned into one gigantic Mongolian clusterfuck. Fired. What was next, a bullet in the back of his head? He didn't have a shred of proof to go against her. No matter what he and Brian said, it was their word against hers. Who would she have on her side? Only a chief medical examiner who the world thought walked on water, the assistant chief of police, and the goddamn mayor. What could Pookie counter with? An overly lethal homicide inspector? A medical examiner who would be portrayed as coveting the CME's job and willing to discredit him to get it? And a computer nerd who was afraid of his own shadow and should have left the force years ago? Zhao held all the cards. She also held his gun. Pookie reached behind the TV, felt for his backup, and found it. He pulled the Glock 22 holster off its Velcro strips. At least he was armed again. It was over. Amy Zhao had won. She had gotten away with it and would continue to do so. Pookie had to break the news to Brian and hope Brian didn't go apeshit crazy in the process. Maybe some extra info could take the edge off, something to put a positive spin on this turd in a punch bowl of a situation. What had Zhao told him to look up? Oh, right, the murder rate when Erickson was in the loony bin. Whatever that was, maybe it could help make things more palatable. Pookie dialed Black Mr. Burns. And where the fuck was that Kung Pao shrimp? Chapter 76. Come and Play. Brian waited. Brian watched. He sat on an old 5-gallon paint bucket he'd found on the roof, his head just high enough to see over the roof's low wall. He positioned himself so a smokestack rose behind him. No silhouette, no outline. 6 stories above Erickson's backyard, just past midnight with a starless sky, and Brian Clouser was all but invisible. He watched the back of the old Victorian, at least what he could see through the darkness in the trees. The small green space looked almost like a terrarium, trees reaching up high, but hemmed in on all sides by concrete, glass, and painted wood, far taller than the trees themselves. The surrounding buildings left the backyard in shadow most of the day. At night, the area under the trees was as black as the overcast sky itself. He could see something through the trees, something soaked in deep shadow at the base of the house, something slanted. The leaves and branches obscured the shape, but that shape bothered him. It was important. He didn't know why. At the back of the yard, opposite the Victorian, a narrow space slid between the building Brian was on and one across from him, a thin alley of grass and trees that led into other backyards. He'd checked the satellite map and knew that one could come out the back of the Victorian, go through the backyard, walk between the buildings and, coated in shadow the entire time, reach Gough Street to the west. A perfect setup. The archer could use that path to come and go unseen, to go out and hunt. He's just like me. He hunts killers, the deadliest game there is. Movement at the base of the house drew Brian's attention. Through the obscuring tree, he saw a change in the shape that disturbed him so. The shape. It was opening. He sucked in a breath and held it, eyes wide with the fresh fear of last night's terrifying dream. The shape was a cellar door. A cellar door that led down. Drenched in thick shadow, he saw something come out of that door. The door shut. Then that something moved. Smooth movement. Effortless movement. In his pants pocket, Brian's cell phone let out a boo-beep. He twitched a little, suddenly afraid that something would hear, would come for him. But he was 6 stories up, and the phone's sound was little more than a whisper. The moving shadow crossed the yard, then stopped, vanishing beneath a tree. Brian waited. The shadow moved to another tree, where it stopped again. The shadow was making sure no one was watching. Another few steps, almost between the buildings now. A thin bit of light fell upon the figure, and Brian saw it. A dark green cloak. The cloak hung almost to the ground, big hood pulled up over the wearer's head. Slipping beneath the cover of nighttime trees, the cloak was a silent shape sliding across the grass. The cell again let out a boo-beep, Pookie trying to reach him. Brian ignored it. The shape moved to the base of Brian's white building. Brian leaned out, carefully, but couldn't see anything in the shadows down there. The cloak, and whoever was in it, had vanished. Brian hadn't seen a bow. Had there been one somewhere under the cloak? He knew better than to give chase. By the time he got down to the street, the perp would be blocks away in an unknown direction. Calling in a bolo would be futile. Zhao or Robertson or Shero would just cancel it and know exactly what Brian was doing. The cloaked figure was gone, but the house wasn't going anywhere. This could be Brian's chance to find some answers. Maybe the vigilante had information on Marie's children. At the very least, he might find some custom-made arrowheads that could connect Erickson to Blackbeard's murder. Something that would let Brian and Pookie push back against Zhao. No one is above the law. The cell phone let out a third boo-beep. Brian looked once more to make sure he'd lost sight of the cloaked figure. He had. Then pulled out the phone. He didn't want to mess with the stupid two-way button, so he just dialed instead.
Brian!
Pookie answered.
You okay?
Pooks, I saw him. He's moving.
I'm already on my way,
Pook said.
I'm in the car now. Don't do anything.
Brian forced himself to whisper, as it was the only way he could control his excitement.
I can't believe it. I saw a guy in a big hooded green cloak. He came right out of these storm cellar doors in the back of Erickson's house. And the way he moved, man, like a... Wait, you're already on the way?
10 minutes, tops.
Something was wrong.
Why are you on your way before I called you to come get me?
A pause. A long pause.
Pooks, Brian said. Answer my question.
He heard Pookie let out a big breath. This didn't sound good.
Brian, it's over. Zhao came to my apartment. She's kicking us out of San Francisco. She said if we quit now, she can get us a job anywhere in the country.
No. Not now. Not when he was so close. The nightmares. The killings. The connection with Rex. That weird Zed chromosome. The answers might be right inside that house.
Brian, it's not so bad. I hear Hawaii is great. Honolulu homicide has a real nice ring to it.
Zhao had fired them? But the house, there had to be something in the house.
Brian, you there? We're done. Did you hear me?
I think the house is empty, Pooks.
Do not go in there, man. If you go in there, we're done as cops, for good. And trust me, she will send your ass to prison. Just get the fuck out of there.
None of that mattered. Brian knew he was on the edge of madness. He didn't care about his job. He didn't care about prison. All he cared about was finding the truth.
Brian, dude, I am begging you. Wait for me, please.
The slate-blue Victorian called to Brian.
I know what you don't. Come and play. Come and play.
Brian, answer me, man. You can't go...
Brian hung up. He turned the phone completely off, put it in his pocket, then headed for the tree that led down to the sidewalk. Chapter 77. Tard's Job. Tard tried to put it all together, but it was confusing. His skin itched. The roof always made him itchy. But he dare not scratch, dare not even move, because the monster had left the house. Tard's job in life was to be terrified. Every night. Every single night he watched the monster come out of the house and disappear somewhere out on the streets. Tard never knew where he went. The monster could double back somewhere, close in on Tard, and then it would be too late. Tard would feel an arrow, or a knife, or a bullet. The only time Tard could breathe easy was for about 5 minutes when the monster returned to the house's back door. But then the feeling slipped away. Maybe the monster had another door, a secret door. Maybe it slipped out, circled around the block, scaled a building and... Tard forced the thoughts away. Focus. This was an important job. Sly had told him so. Important and tricky, like James Bond. That's what Tard wanted to be. Like James Bond, all smooth and stuff. Tard's hands trembled as he reached down, slowly, to pick up the cell phone. He couldn't have it on his body, not when he was hiding, so he just set it on the ground. He dialed. Sly answered on the second ring.
Chameleon, how goes your mission?
Chameleon. That's what Tard wanted to be called, but no one called him that. Not without laughing, anyway. No one except Sly. Sly never laughed.
Sly! He left the house!
Good man. Just stay there. Call me when he comes back in.
But can I join you guys this time?
You need to stay. Something glorious is happening, Chameleon. It's happening tonight. We must know when the monster returns. We can't do this without your bravery.
Tard wanted to go with Sly and the others. He was sad he could not. But Sly said this job, the watching, was very important.
Okay, Sly, I'll stay. I'll be brave. Has Marco come back yet?
No. We think the monster got him.
Sadness. Tard wanted to cry. First Chomper, now Marco. The monster murdered people, and Tard was up here all alone.
Sly, I'm scared.
Just stay there,
Sly said.
If you stay still, the monster won't find you. And if you move around, what happens if Firstborn finds out where you've been all these nights?
Firstborn. Firstborn could make you go away. Forever. And Firstborn had said no one was to go near the monster's house.
Do you really think he'll find out?
Not if you stay there,
Sly said.
When the monster comes back, call me.
Sly hung up. Tard slowly set the phone back down on the roof. So slowly. If you didn't want the monster to take you into his basement, it was best to not move at all. Fear of the monster. Fear of Firstborn. The need to go out, to find a won't-be. Wanting to be brave so Sly would like him, so Tard could make some friends. Too many things to think of. Sly had said only the bravest of Marie's children could watch the monster. The monster had killed everyone who went near the house. Many brothers and sisters had tried to kill the monster, sometimes with guns and everything. None of them ever came back. So watching the house, well, even that was just dang dangerous. But if you could do it, if you could watch, Sly said, then everyone would know you were brave, and everyone would like you. Except Tard couldn't tell anyone about his job, because Firstborn said no one was ever to go near the monster's house. Sly said it was okay, though, to ignore Firstborn's orders, as long as no one found out. Movement. Down by the monster's house, by the back door. It was the man dressed in black, the man who had been circling the block earlier. How exciting! Tard stayed very still, because he was good at that. Tard watched. Chapter 78. Cowardice. John Smith checked the caller ID. Pookie Chang. What now? Pookie had just called 30 minutes earlier with that murder rate research project. John loved Pookie and would always have his back. But truth be told, the guy was more than a little too quick to delegate detective work. John answered.
Pooks, you gotta give a guy a chance. I haven't even started to search the database yet, let alone start tabulating stuff. This isn't...
John, I need you right now.
Pookie never called him John.
What's happening?
Brian's having a meltdown. I need you at Erickson's house ASAP.
John looked to his apartment window, even though he knew what he'd see. The blackness of night. Lit up only by streetlights and the glowing windows across the road.
It's dark out, John said.
I know it's dark out, John. Brian is going in there without a warrant, and if he does, Zhao is going to screw him right to the wall. I don't know if I can stop him on my own. I need your help.
John stared out the window, stared and shook his head. He wanted to help Brian, he did, but it was dark outside. And Pookie wanted him to go to the house of a killer?
Pooks, I just can't.
The fuck you can't! Your black ass would be dead if it wasn't for Brian.
I'm so sorry for what happened to you, I am. But you get your gun, get on that Harley and move.
John nodded. Hard to breathe. Brian needed him, Erickson's. It wasn't all that far, not at this hour, using the bike to slide between traffic, if there was any traffic. Yeah, okay, I can be there in 15 minutes.
Make it 10,
Pookie said.
And don't forget your gun. This isn't about you anymore. Man up or just stay in your goddamn apartment for the rest of your life.
Pookie hung up. John closed his eyes tight.
Breathe. You have to go. You have to.
He reached into his desk drawer and pulled out his Sig Sauer. His hand was already trembling. Chapter 79. The Kill. The sound of a shutting door made Rex snap awake. Had someone found him? He was still in the brown garbage can. The lid was still closed. What had happened? He had just closed his eyes, tried to think of his people finding him. Had he fallen asleep? It was totally dark out. Was it past midnight? He didn't have a watch, didn't have a phone. He heard a click, click, click sound. He rose slowly, the top of his head lifting the hinged lid so he could peek out under it. There was April, walking away from the house, a big smile on her face. Her high heels clicked on the concrete. Maybe she had just fucked Alex. Maybe she had given him a blowjob. She looked dirty, unclean. There was no one else on the street. There were no cars. She was walking away, fast, like she was fleeing him. It spun him up to think that she was trying to escape. No one else on the street. His attempt to make his so-called family come had failed. Maybe it didn't work that way. He didn't know. What if April didn't return? What if she was going to get help? What if she was going to get her parents? What if Rex wouldn't have another chance? She would have a key. Alex would be alone in the house. Rex quietly crawled out of the garbage can. Blanket wrapped around him, he walked after April. Could he get her? He'd killed Roberta. Roberta was bigger and stronger than April the meth head. His feet carried him after her. He had to get her. Click, click, click. Rex's feet made no noise. He reached out for her, locked his hands around her neck, and squeezed. She grabbed at his fingers. She tried to turn, but he wouldn't let her. She made little grunting noises, not enough air for a real scream. Her nails raked the back of his hands, so he squeezed as hard as he possibly could. April twitched. She kicked out weakly. She stopped moving. Rex was so turned on, so damn turned on. He pulled her into an apartment building entryway and gently set her on the ground. He wouldn't have long. Rex looked in her little purse and found the keys. He couldn't hide here forever. He had to face Alex. Alex, who had stomped on his arm, broken it. Alex, who had punched Rex in the face so many times, kicked him in the stomach. Rex shook his head. He wouldn't be afraid anymore. He wouldn't. He was the king. He looked around again to see if anyone saw him. The street was silent. There was no movement. Rex walked to the house. He tried to breathe. Alex was inside. Rex's hand caressed the front door's white-painted wood. He had killed two women. Alex Panos wasn't a woman. Alex was big and strong. Rex couldn't run now. Couldn't stop himself from going in. One way or another, Alex's endless torment ended now. Rex's breath came in deep, ragged spurts.
Kill Alex. Kill Alex. Kill Alex.
Rex's hand slid down to the brass doorknob, cool to the touch. He tried a key. It didn't fit. He tried another, staying as quiet as he could. The third one slid in. He turned the key, then turned the handle. Rex stepped inside. There was a room to the right. Coming from inside the room, the blue-white flashes of a TV playing in the darkness. From that room, a voice.
Did you get my chocodiles? You better have my chocodiles, girl.
Rex walked into the room. Alex Panos, big, strong Alex Panos, sat in a chair facing a huge TV screen. Alex stood up quickly. He looked across the room, somewhere to Rex's right, then looked back at Rex. Alex's hands curled into fists.
You little faggot, he said. What are you doing here?
The voice froze Rex's feet in place. He couldn't move. He couldn't think of anything but the fists smashing against his nose, the knees breaking his lips, the boot snapping his arm. The flickering light from the TV played off of Alex's blonde hair.
The news said you killed your mom, he said.
A statement with an underlying meaning. You killed your mom. Are you here to kill me? Yes. That's exactly what Rex was there to do. His feet came unglued. He took one step forward.
Don't!
Alex said.
Get out of here or I will fuck you up! Did you tell anyone where I am?
Rex took another step. Alex looked to Rex's right again. There was something there Alex wanted, but Rex wouldn't take his eyes off the prey even for a second.
You better run away, motherfucker, Alex said. Go now, or I'm gonna hurt you real bad this time.
The voice of anger. The voice of hate. But there was something new there. Fear. Rex breathed in deep through his nose. He didn't just hear Alex's fear. He smelled it. Alex suddenly ran to his left, crossing in front of the TV. Rex shot forward before he even knew what he was doing. He slammed into Alex, driving the bigger boy back into the TV. Plastic cracked. Something sparked, and they both hit the ground hard. Alex cried out, a squeal of pain very unlike his manly words of threat. Rex started to stand, then felt a fist slam into his mouth. So hard. He fell back and landed on his ass. A boot crunched into his stomach, crushing the air out of his lungs, making Rex's body curl up into a ball. All the fear came rushing back. The terror of beatings past consumed him, because he knew this one would be worse than all the others. He shouldn't have come here. A big fist hit him in the back of the head, bouncing his face off the wood floor.
You ruined April's TV, you asshole!
A steel-toed boot hammered his ribs. Rex started to scream, to cry out, but he clenched his teeth together. It didn't hurt as bad as he remembered it. Rex opened his eyes. Right in front of him, a foot, a shin, a knee. He reached out, grabbed Alex's heel, and yanked. Alex went down fast, the back of his head cracking off the floor. His eyes scrunched tight, and his mouth opened in a silent gasp of confused pain. He rolled to his side, hands holding the back of his head. Blood dripped from his fingers. Rex had done that. He had made Alex bleed. Rex stood on shaky legs. He felt blood trickling from his own nose, his own mouth. He stepped forward and raised his foot. Alex looked up just as Rex's heel smashed down. The bigger boy let out a noise, part fear, part rage, part agony. He rolled away, blood pouring from his now ruined nose. He looked confused, shocked. Rex smiled a bloody smile, the smile of a fighter. His hands curled into fists.
It's your turn, bully, he said. It's your turn to hurt.
Alex scrambled away on hands and knees. Rex started to follow, but stopped when he heard a loud noise from above. Several noises. Something landing on the roof. Both boys looked up to the ceiling, eyes searching for the source of the sound, as if their eyes could penetrate wood and plaster.
Shit!
Alex said.
The fuck is this?
Rex's chest started to thrum.
Ba-da-bum-bum, ba-da-bum-bum.
The same feeling he'd experienced when he met Marco. His family had arrived. How perfect. Rex looked back at Alex, but Alex had moved. He was standing to the right of the door, next to a small table. He held a gun. Too late, Rex realized that's what Alex had been glancing at while they had talked. The gun had been on the table the whole time, just an arm's reach away, but Rex hadn't noticed.
No. No fair! I beat him! I beat him! I had my revenge! No fair!
Fuck you, faggot! Alex said, then pulled the trigger. Something slammed into Rex's belly. His legs gave out. As he fell, he heard a combination of sounds. Splintering wood, another gunshot, and then the screams of Alex Panos. Chapter 80. The Basement. Brian Clouser stood in the shadows of trees that were themselves drenched in the shadows of tall buildings. He flexed his hands, fists making his leather gloves creak. He stared at the back of the gray house. He stared at the cellar door. The basement. Whatever bad thing was happening, it was in the basement. He had to know. The cellar door waited for him, a demon mouth ready to open and bite, to chew and shred and tear and crunch. Dream memories blurred his reality, merged and shifted with what he saw until he wasn't sure what was actually there. "Come closer," the house seemed to say. "Come, little fool. Save me the trouble of reaching out to pull you in." His Nike slid across the grass, carrying him to the door. He bent, reached out a hand, touched. It wasn't wood. Heavy-gauge metal, painted to look like the same wood as the rest of the house. In the door's upper left corner, a keypad lock. The thing was bomb shelter solid. He couldn't open it. Was he dreaming? Was this really happening? "Did you think it would be easy?" the house said. "You'll have to work harder to find your death." Brian closed his eyes and rubbed them hard with the heels of his hands. He wasn't crazy. He wasn't. He had to get in there. "You think a house is talking to you? Sounds crazy to me." "I'll burn you to the ground," Brian said. "Burn you and piss on the coals. Then you'll never know what's inside. Never know. Never know." Brian bit hard into the heel of his left hand. The pain rose up, clearing his thoughts. That helped. He wasn't crazy. He wasn't. He walked to a window and peeked in. Beyond the glass, the dull gleam of metal revealed some kind of inside shutter. It looked just as tough as the cellar entrance. He'd have to try the front door. Brian drew his Sig Sauer and walked down the side of the house, his left shoulder almost touching the slate-blue wood, shadows curling around him in a lover's embrace. Pookie turned onto Franklin Street, then floored it. The Buick's engine roared. He kept to the middle lane as much as he could, swerving left or right when he needed to, running red lights with little care for what might happen. He dressed for the occasion. No ill-fitting suit jacket this time. Black jeans, black shoes, a black sweater stretched over his gut, and the black Glock 22 in the black holster attached to his black belt. It was a fashion statement that would win the Brian Clouser seal of approval. Pookie didn't use the bubble light or the siren. Couldn't draw attention. If any other cops showed up, the Terminator was screwed. He hoped Black Mr. Burns would get there quick. The Harley's big twin engine roared at the night, the sound bouncing off the buildings on either side to fill the street with an echoing, angry gurgle. John forced himself to breathe. His neck already hurt from trying to look in all directions at once. So many buildings, so many windows, so many places for someone to hide, to point a gun. He rolled the throttle back, and the Harley picked up speed. He slipped around a truck, then lane split between a pair of BMWs. Maybe someone was aiming at him right now, tracking him, lining up the shot. The feeling pressed his chest inward like a tightening vise wrapped all the way around his ribs. His breaths came faster. He was starting to hyperventilate. He shook his helmeted head. Brian needed him. So did Pookie. Just this once. He could push the fear down just this once, and for a single night, be a man again. Gun in hand, Brian walked up the mansion's wide steps. Traffic rolled along on Franklin Street behind him, but it was part of some other world, some other dimension. Brian stood before the front door. The porch roof blocked the streetlights, bathing him in the night's thick black. He reached out a hand, let his fingertips touch the double door's ornate wood.
"Come on, little one. Come and taste the end."
"Shut up!" Brian hissed. "Shut up! I'm not hearing this!"
"You and only you hear it. And they call you the Terminator. You're a joke, and here you are walking to your own death. Come on, little one. Don't you want to know what's inside? Never know. Never know."
"You talk too much," Brian said. Then he raised his left foot and kicked just below the door handle. Wood cracked with a cannon blast sound. The double doors flew open, the right one tumbling into the hallway beyond to crash hard against the floor. The door had looked a lot more solid than that. Must have been some cheap pine, and not the old oak Brian had thought it was at first glance. Then came the blaring shrill of an alarm. Brian walked inside. He didn't notice his surroundings. He was looking for one thing and one thing only. Somewhere in here was a door to the basement. The break-in tripped a magnetic sensor, which sent a signal down a thin wire to the small alarm control box in the basement. That had triggered the klaxon that screeched through the house, but the system wasn't finished. A telephone wire ran out of the control box into a multi-line office phone, the kind that had once been white, but had yellowed with well over 2 decades of age. The phone had a handset, next to which ran a vertical line of 8 buttons, each with a red light. The red light next to line 1 lit up. The phone's speaker let out a brief dial tone, then 7 rapid digital beeps. Pookie saw the tall turret of Erickson's mansion up on the left. Cars lined the curb, leaving nowhere to park. He saw the house's driveway. It was wide open. He didn't want to park there and draw attention from anyone who might be in the house, but he was out of time. He pulled in, locking up the brakes to skid across the gravel. He grabbed his Streamlight Stinger flashlight and was out the door even before the Buick rocked back from the sudden stop. He heard the house's ringing alarm. Pookie ran to the mansion steps, up to the porch, and saw the smashed open front doors. Brian was already inside. Pookie had to get him out. In the distance, over the alarm's blare, he heard the oncoming heavy gurgle of a Harley. Pookie drew his Glock. Gun in one hand, flashlight in the other, he entered the house, stepping past the fallen door that lay flat on the entryway floor. The alarm screeched its constant metallic tone. Pookie knelt and aimed his flashlight beam at the door's edge. It was solid oak. Almost 2 inches of solid oak. Strong as hell. Had Brian done that? With what? A pair of deadbolts winked in his moving flashlight beam. Then Pookie saw something else. A 3-foot-long steel bar, the kind used to secure a door. The bar was bent at one end. Brian had ripped through a super-thick door, 2 big deadbolts, and a fucking steel bar. Pookie remembered seeing Brian jump up on top of the van. It had been dark. He'd been far away. His eyes had been playing tricks on him, etc., etc. He'd told himself those things, deluded himself into thinking that Brian was just Brian and not something else. Images flashed in Pookie's thoughts. a cloaked man jumping across a street from one building to the next, a body with the arm ripped off at the shoulder, Robin talking about new genes and mutations. Everything connected. "Oh, shit," Pookie said. Brian was in more trouble than either of them had ever imagined. Pookie stood, let his flashlight beam play across the house's dark interior as he walked deeper inside. The sounds of nighttime traffic filtered up from the street four stories below. The evening wind danced by, not quite strong enough to ruffle his green cloak. His ears had long since tuned out the normal sounds of the city. The only things that he really heard, that he really listened for, were gunshots, screams, and sometimes, the roars. Below him was Rex Dubrovnichuk's house, police tape across the door. Would the kid come back? Unknown, but where else to look? Rex had vanished, as had Alex Panos. Staking out Alex's apartment had paid off. Alex had come home. The result? Another dead member of Marie's children. The Isaac boy had died up on the roof, but that was how things went. Everyone dies eventually. Beneath the heavy cloak, he felt a buzz from his pager. The house. He didn't need to look at the pager to know this. His hands did a fast automatic pat-down. Bow tied on his back, quiver secured, all 10 shafts in place. Fabrique Nationale 5.7mm handgun secure in the holster strapped to his left thigh. 4 loaded 20-round magazines at the small of his back. Silver-coated K-bar knife slung in the sheath on his right thigh. And mini-grenades strapped to the bandolier across his chest. 2 concussion, 2 thermite, 2 shrapnel. It had been a very long time since he'd had visitors. He had to get home, show them some hospitality. Brian stood at the bottom of the basement stairs. He wasn't sure if he could move. Every atom in his body screamed at him to stop. His dreams, where he'd killed people, eaten people. Those had been bad, perhaps the worst things he'd ever experienced. But those hadn't been the only dreams. The dream of being dragged, dragged into this basement. Hurt, wounded, afraid, bleeding. Dragged into this basement by a monster. A monster that could be down here, waiting. No, the monster was gone. Brian had watched it leave. But when would it return? The house alarm wasn't as loud down here. His flashlight beam bounced through the blackness, illuminating a glossy wooden floor, crown molding, even a fireplace. The long space looked like a small ballroom from days gone by. At the back of the room, he saw a door. Engraved letters gleamed from a brass plaque. They spelled out, Rumpus Room. Brian walked toward the door. Pookie had to hurry. He knew that. But he couldn't look away. He needed just a few seconds to take it all in. Everything his flashlight lit up seemed to reek of money. Turn-of-the-century money. The place looked like it was taken out of a movie from the days of the lumber barons, the gold barons, the whatever barons. Back then, men had built places like this for their wives and daughters, to impress the city, or simply to let everyone know just how rich they were. Pookie was standing in the 19th-century equivalent of a red sports car. A heavy staircase rose up to his right. To his left, something glowed from within a wide-open doorway. Pookie stepped through. Inside of a marble fireplace guarded by 2 knee-high brass sphinxes, dying coals gave off a faint, flickering light. His flashlight beam played off endless splendor. A sparkling crystal chandelier, polished redwood paneling with hand-carved trim, marble floors with thick grains of granite and thin streaks of gold, gleaming brass fixtures, ornate picture frames showing faces of spooky-looking rich dudes. Outside, he heard the distinctive roar of an approaching Harley, an oncoming Doppler effect that didn't transition to the fadeaway because the engine idled, then stopped. Pookie pinched his flashlight under his right arm. He pulled out his phone and dialed with his left hand, even as he continued to turn, his right hand pointing the Glock before him. He stopped when his flashlight illuminated an open door. Through the door were stairs leading down. The phone rang only twice before Black Mr. Burns answered.
"I'm here, man, but I'm flipping out,"
he said.
"Where the hell are you?"
"Inside."
"Want me to come in?"
"Not yet," Pookie said. "Get on the porch and stay there. Don't let anyone in, not even cops. I'll call if I need you." Pookie hung up. He had to trust that John could manage his fear and control anything that came up. Pookie took a breath, then started down the stairs. Footsteps. Heavy ones. Brian shut off his flashlight. He aimed his Sig Sauer back across the ballroom floor toward the base of the stairs. He saw a flashlight beam sliding down the steps, flicking around, followed by legs, then a portly, black sweater-clad belly that could only belong to one man. The flashlight beam whipped across the walls, then landed squarely in Brian's eyes. Brian blinked, held up a hand to block the light.
"Books, do you mind?"
The beam dropped to Brian's feet.
"Klauser! You are seriously chapping my ass! Come on, man, we have to get out of here, now!"
Brian turned his back to Pookie, played his own beam across the dull brass plaque. The letters of Rumpus Room gleamed and danced.
"Through here," he said.
"Brian, no! Dude, come on, the game is over and we lost. If we are caught here, we are so screwed."
"I'm not leaving until I figure this out, so you might as well help."
Pookie sighed and walked forward to stand at Brian's right shoulder.
"Klauser, you are such an AWGMK.
"That a new one?"
"Yeah, I made it up just now. It means you are an asshole who'll get me killed."
Pookie played his beam across the wooden door's gloss, then let it rest on the intricate brass handle.
"Brian, just tell me one thing. Is this worth going to prison for?"
"It is," Brian said.
"And you got the memo about what happens to cops in prison?"
Brian nodded.
"It's worth that, too."
"Awesome," Pookie said. "I was afraid you'd say that. I don't suppose this door is open."
"Nope."
"Double awesome. Well, I guess we can say aloha to Honolulu Homicide."
Brian closed his eyes and shook his head. His career was over. He knew that, but he didn't need to drag Pookie along for the ride.
"Pooks, maybe you should just go."
"A little late for that, Bri. I'm already fired, and you already said this meant enough to you that you'd go to prison for it. I'll finish the job."
Pookie was still all in. There was no point in arguing. Brian would have done the same for him.
"I think what we need is on the other side," Brian said. "Let's figure out how to get this door open."
It wasn't the first time they'd attacked his house. Every 10 years or so, one or two of them got stupid enough to forget what happened to the last one or two, and they came for him. They'd always known right where his house was. All they had to do was come over and kill him. They had tried the back door, the windows, even the roof. Over the years, he'd sealed all of those things up. As well as he could, anyway. Some of them were so strong there was little you could do to keep them out. One industrious little monster had even tunneled in, going right through the basement concrete. He'd killed them all. The tunneler was still his favorite. The stupid bastard had dug right up into the rumpus room. Savior hadn't even had to move him. He'd just cut the intruder's spinal cord so he couldn't walk, then went to work. Oh, how that one had screamed. They screamed, they begged, they threatened. And yet for all their useless words, they never, ever gave up the information Savior most needed to know. Such was the way of things. The pager told him the front door had been breached, so he approached from the roof of the building across the street. He looked